This week, unidentified aerial phenomena, UFOs, extraterrestrials, and Freemasonry. What do these three topics have in common? Has the recent hoopla about UAPs got you thinking about what would happen if disclosure occurred? Then we talk about the most recent holiday, Father's Day, which also coincided with the summer solstice, the longest day of the year. What are the origins of the summer solstice? What other holidays are similar? And how does it tie back to Freemasonry? All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 501. As usual, I need to start off the show by thanking our supporters, our fellows, contributors, producers, and of course, our legacy partners. We cannot do this show without you, and if you want to know more about how you can help support the WCY podcast in producing another 500 episodes, go to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and see how you can assist. We have monthly contribution levels, we've got one-time contribution options, all of that good stuff there. And the details are there for you to check out. If you'd like some other ways to support the show, check out our website, go to the shop, and you will see some various items that we're selling that all go back to the production cost and help us out with the show. As far as upcoming scheduled talks, I just did one this week for the North Carolina Research Society on the Legend of Adam's Grave, something I premiered at the Boston Masonicon 2021-ish, right? So that is a really popular presentation right now. I'm getting a lot of people asking about me doing that one. And the next one that you might be able to catch me on actually is July 12th. I'll be doing the Masonic Pub Crawl, Freemasonry in America and its Colonial Tavern Beginnings. I'll be doing that for Olive Branch Lodge number 114, good friend of mine, Brother Kevin Homan. And his lodge, really excited about sharing some fellowship with them. In the news, I want to say thank you once more for all of the love for the people that were posting about a 500th episode. That was so cool to read all of that. It made my heart swell so big, it exploded. I really do appreciate everybody and all of the love for the podcast, and I just want to say thank you guys so much. Truly humbled by the commentary that was out there, and again, I really appreciate it. This is a labor of love, and I'm just glad you guys enjoy. Something that I'm in the works of putting together is a little play that we're going to do. It is a live read, and it will be dramatized. So if you've ever watched, like, maybe one of your favorite shows do something during the COVID pandemic, like a live table read with the cast, right? And you're watching them on Zoom read their parts dramatically, we're going to do this. What's the play, though? Well, I've assembled a wonderful cast of people and characters to play the various parts in a play written quite a long time ago, or compiled a long time ago, by Manly P. Hall. It was called The Initiation of Plato. Now, I've reached out to the Philosophical Research Society for their blessing to do this, and not only did they say, go for it, they are very excited about Hall's work coming, quote-unquote, to life. So look for more news on that and where you'll be able to watch that live read, which will be, again, dramatized. We've got an all-star cast of folks who are going to be doing some great readings, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I mentioned on the last episode that we're going to be working with Brother Alex Powers to come up with some ideas about what happened with this Fraternity of Osiris in the Kansas City area. And then speaking of Kansas, if you head on over to this website we put up called MasonicConferences.com, you can check out the dates and the different conferences that are happening. But yeah, MasonicCon Kansas next year. It's going to be epic. So stay tuned. Check out that website if you want to know where there's going to be a Masonic Con around you. That is where there'll be information updated all the time. The first article I wanted to read for you this week is from the independent journal, Science News, and they published an article called 50 Years Ago, UFO Sightings in the United States Went Bust. Now, of course, there's all kinds of amazing coverage today about ufology and the like, and really, there's a lot to this, right? It is a definite phenomenon today. But why am I reading this? Well, it has an interesting intercept with something that Darren Lehners wrote recently. But before we get to that, let's check out this news. 50 years ago, UFO sightings in the United States went bust, an excerpt from the June 26, 1971 issue of Science News. What happened to UFOs? June 26, 1971. Since 1968, the number of UFO sightings has dropped off, along with public interest in them. The scientific debunking of the UFO phenomenon and the subsequent, though not necessarily connected, decline in sightings presented an interesting behavioral pattern. UFO reports usually run in 5-year cycles, and 1972 should be the start of another cycle. Update: reports of unidentified flying objects have had their ups and downs. In 2020, people in the United States made more than 7,200 reports of UFO sightings, about 1,000 more than in 2019 and nearly 4,000 more than in 2018, according to the National UFO Reporting Center in Davenport, Washington. A quarter of last year's reports occurred in March and April, when much of the controversy was under lockdown due to the pandemic. Many of these UFOs turned out to be drones or satellites. In late April, the Pentagon officially released naval footage of unidentified aerial phenomena that had been shared online, which may have primed some people to seek UFOs in their own backyard. And this was just posted by Lillian Steenblick, Hwang, on June 21st, 2021. I'll provide a link back to this short blurb here from the website. I do encourage you to check out the website, subscribe to their newsletters, if you're at all interested in kind of really cool topics. In fact, today, the day I'm looking at this, there was a really great article about J. Ernest Wilkins, Jr. He was one of the Manhattan Project standouts, despite racism that was existing in the United States back then. He's a very celebrated mathematician, and it just kind of celebrates him and his character and things. Nothing to do with Freemasonry. He wasn't a Mason to my knowledge or anything, but just to give you an idea of the kind of cool stuff that they post on their website. So where does this lead into Freemasonry? Well, last week, Darren Lehners wrote a piece called UAPs. That is the new acronym for UFOs, right? So instead of unidentified flying objects, we have now made this weird switch over to UAPs, which is unidentified aerial phenomena. So UAPs, extraterrestrials, and Freemasonry, a thought experiment. By Midnight Freemason contributor, Darren A. Lehners. He starts off, "This article is not for everyone. If you are not interested in the topic, then read no further. The purpose of this article is to make you think about how Freemasonry is impacted or could be impacted by the recent acknowledgement of the United States government that UAPs are a real phenomenon or the possibility of an announcement that extraterrestrial life is visiting Earth. There are no right or wrong answers to the questions I'm asking. These are my own thoughts and opinions, and they do not reflect any official doctrine or opinion of the Grand Lodge of Illinois or any other Masonic body that I am affiliated with. Also, if you came here via Google search looking for a conspiracy about Freemasons being shape-shifting reptilians, how we are hiding the knowledge of UAPs, extraterrestrials, or any other conspiracy Freemasonry is accused of, I am afraid you will not find anything of the sort in the below article. UAPs, or Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon, commonly known as UFOs or Unidentified Flying Objects, have been in the news recently, culminating in a 60-minute segment where the two naval aviators that encountered the white tic-tac-looking object while on maneuvers off the coast of San Diego went on camera to discuss the encounter. The incident, better known as the Nimitz incident, occurred in 2004. Subsequently, forward-looking infrared camera footage, radar data, and other corroborating data has been declassified regarding military encounters with these strange craft in both the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans. While many that study the phenomenon believe that disclosure by our government regarding the existence of extraterrestrial life is right around the corner, a report that is due to be released and presented by Congress by the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force seems to only confirm that we know that what we are encountering is not a top-secret American military project. Otherwise, we do not know what they are." According to the former head of the Pentagon Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, AATIP or ATIP, Louis or Lou Elizondo, he says these craft exhibit 5 key observable characteristics. 1. Anti-gravity lift. They are able to hover in one place or travel with no visible means of propulsion. They also have no visible flight surfaces, like wings. They are able to stay aloft without the apparent need to refuel. 2. Sudden and instantaneous acceleration. The objects accelerate or change direction so quickly that no human pilot could survive the G-force associated with the movements. Most of our most advanced aircraft could survive 15 Gs before disintegrating. The UAPs and the Nimitz incidents was observed making erratic turns. One of the pilots involved in the incident, Commander Dave Fravor, has stated that its side-to-side movements remind him of a ping-pong ball, and tracked by radar operators on the USS Princeton, which was part of the Nimitz task force at speeds of 3,600 miles per hour. That's 60 miles per minute. As a frame of reference, that is over twice the maximum speed of the FA-18 Super Hornet jet that Commander Fravor was flying. 3. Hypersonic velocities without signatures. These objects do not cause sonic booms or leave any vapor trails, even though they are able to travel at incredible speeds. 4. Low observability or cloaking. Observation of the craft is difficult either visually through radar or other means. One of the Navy pilots who was involved in an encounter off the East Coast in the summer of 2014 stated that he could not see the object through his helmet camera, even though his radar told him it was there, and he was able to lock onto the object. 5. Transmedium travel. These objects have been observed traveling through different mediums like space, the atmosphere, underwater, sometimes all three during one encounter. Obviously, this causes a lot of concern from a national security standpoint. If there's a foreign adversary with this technology, then it stands to reason that the United States military is behind the proverbial eight ball when it comes to a potential confrontation, because, by all accounts, the UAPs can outperform our top-of-the-line aircraft. For the sake of argument, let us assume that UAPs are not from a foreign adversary. From all accounts, based upon some of the documents that were released by the Kremlin at the end of the Cold War, we know that the Russians have been encountering these craft as well. We also know that our allies have also encountered them, so it stands to reason that this is a worldwide phenomenon. If these objects are not man-made, then who made them and what are they? There are quite a few theories about where these craft come from, assuming that they are not man-made. Some think that in the future, humanity discovers time travel and that these are time machines coming from the future to visit the past. Others hypothesize that these are from another dimension or space between dimensions. There is another belief that these objects are piloted by the fallen angels and demons or jinn, which are referenced in many of the world's religions and volumes of sacred law. There are some that believe that these are part of a breakaway civilization that originated on Earth. The most common belief is that the craft are extraterrestrial. One of the landmarks of Freemasonry is the belief in a supreme being. As we all know, there is no, quote-unquote, Masonic God. A Freemason remains committed to the God of the religion he professes. We meet with a common respect for the idea of a supreme being, but that the definition of that being is part of each individual's religious belief. And we do not attempt to join religions together as a part of Freemasonry. Instead, we use the term great or supreme architect of the universe to recognize the concept of God in a non-denominational way. As part of this thought exercise, let us assume that there is an acknowledgement by the United States government sometime in the not-too-distant future that what is being observed is not of this earth. Would the acknowledgement or discovery of extraterrestrial life impact Freemasonry? Many religions already have accepted the idea of life not just existing on Earth. If the great architect allowed life to blossom on our planet, then it stands to reason that given the enormity of the universe, the great architect would be capable of allowing it to do so throughout the universe. I do not see how Freemasonry is impacted by the discovery or acknowledgement of extraterrestrial life. For the sake of the thought experiment, let me take this a step further. Let us assume that we make contact with extraterrestrial race and communication with them is established. Taking it one step further, let us also assume that this race communicates that it has no knowledge of the Supreme Architect. The extraterrestrials do not believe in a supreme being. They have no religious dogma in their civilization, and they are adamant that during their vast travels throughout the universe, they have never encountered any other civilization that has a belief in a supreme being. Would this impact Freemasonry? We currently practice Freemasonry in and live in a world where there are many individuals that are atheists. I do not see how a technologically advanced atheistic civilization would impact Freemasonry. However, from my own personal perspective, my faith in a supreme being does not change just because another form of life tells me it should. If my faith is, or my belief in the supreme architect is strong, then it does not matter if Mr. Gray the alien or Mr. Gray my next door neighbor tells me something contrary. Who is to say what the extraterrestrials are stating is the truth? Just because an extraterrestrial race is technologically superior does not mean that they are ethically or morally superior. It could also mean that, for some reason, the great architect has decided not to make itself known to them. As we finish our thought experiment, let us assume that this extraterrestrial race that has made contact with us does believe in a supreme being, religious dogma, and they have a volume of sacred law. However, their religion is completely foreign to humanity. Let us suppose that, being a technologically advanced civilization, they have been observing humanity, our beliefs, our social structures, our government, and our technological advances. Let us also suppose, for the sake of argument, that they have knowledge of Freemasonry through this awareness. Let us suppose that at least one of them might be interested enough in Freemasonry to petition a lodge for membership. Let me suggest that we don't understand much about our new extraterrestrial visitors. We do not know much about their history, their customs, or their society in general. If the individual entity in question has a belief in a supreme being, is of lawful age, and joins of their own free will and accord, and they prove themselves to be of good repute, would you allow them to join your lodge? I'm interested in your answers to that question. Please comment below, email me, or comment on social media if you are interested in the UAP subject or similar high strangeness. I will shamelessly plug a project I do on the side with the other editor of the Midnight Freemasons blog, the host of Whence Came You podcast, Robert Johnson, called Beyond the Fourth Veil. Robert and I discuss our encounters with UAPs in the first episode. The link to the YouTube channel is below. So, aside from the shameless plug there, I'm curious, what are your thoughts about the thought experiment? If we make contact, we intermingle, and we're at a point where maybe they live here with us. There have been a lot of movies that have been really interesting about, you know, integration of different forms of life form into the human societies that we live in. I'm reminded of movies about robots and AI. And I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember a show that used to be on television called Alien Nation, where there was actual integration of aliens living amongst humans. The aliens would get drunk by drinking milk. It was pretty interesting. But the show really targeted this idea of inequality and social justice. And it was really interesting to see what most would probably easily see ideas of the struggles of humanity and race disparity and things, but this was with an alien race, which was really pretty powerful for its time in the 1980s, over 30 years ago, almost 40 years ago. Geez Louise. So, yeah, that's your first question for this week's Craftsman Plus is going to be, assume aliens have been living among us for, let's say, 20 years. You got a petition from an alien to join the Masonic fraternity. Would you let him in? Would we let him in? Does it violate landmarks? I'm curious on any of your thought process there. You know, on first thought, I'd say, yeah, why not? Maybe they're an amazing ritualist. But in any case, look forward to reading your replies. Feel free to leave those same replies in the blog article. I'll, of course, post a link back to that as well in the show notes. Thanks to Brother Darren Lanos for his continued efforts and making us think a little bit. All right. Right now, we just passed. It was Father's Day, so happy belated Father's Day to all of us dads out there and anybody else who celebrates. Recently, BBC published an article on the summer solstice, right? Father's Day ended up being on the longest day of the year. This year, the summer solstice, and the summer solstice has begun to garner such attention worldwide. In fact, many people travel from around the world to go to Stonehenge. to celebrate the solstice. The summer solstice, hundreds attend Stonehenge despite advice, is the title of a short article published, just a blurb here, on the BBC News. And it says, as a result, the English Heritage pulled a live feed of the sunrise at the Neolithic monument at Wiltshire at 4:52 BST due to safety concerns. People were seen climbing over a low fence to access the stones. Wiltshire police said that the event was peaceful, but added the number of people at nearby Avebury had caused issues. More than 200,000 people from around the world tuned in to a live stream for the solstice, but ended up watching a pre-recorded footage of the stones until the feed returned at around 5 BST, showing largely cloudy skies. Video from the scene showed about 100 people inside the stone circle and banner reading, "Standing for Stonehenge." The English Heritage had been preparing to welcome visitors in person until the government delayed the easing of COVID restrictions in July. It said that it was a difficult decision to cancel the planned celebration that were made following discussions with Wiltshire Council and the Wiltshire Police. But what is the summer solstice? Well, it's the longest day of the year with the most hours of sunlight. The word solstice comes from the fact that the sun appears to stand still, from the Latin words sol or sun and sestere, to stand still. The summer solstice always occurs between the 20th and 22nd June in the Northern Hemisphere, and during a leap year, it always falls on the 20th. This is because the calendar year does not match exactly the time it takes the Earth to orbit the Sun. The calendar is approximately a quarter of a day short, which is why we have leap years to bring the calendar back in line with the Earth's orbit. While the summer solstice is the day that has the most hours of sunlight, it can signal warmer weather is on the horizon because the UK's weather typically becomes hotter during July and August. So there was this celebration that was planned, and it was kind of like overrun by folks who rushed the joint, although largely in peace. But the solstice in Freemasonry is really interesting because, it's supposed to be this midpoint between the two pillars. The summer solstice is one of the two pillars right on either side. The other is the winter solstice, and in the middle is like that kind of individual equilibrium point between the two. And I thought it would be cool to read a little bit about the summer solstice that just happened. So this is coming from the philosophicalsociety.org. Again, a link back to the article will of course be there for you. And this is by Pictiswitch, is the person who wrote it. And this was published back in July 2018. The summer solstice, which is also commonly known as midsummer, takes place when one of the Earth's poles reaches maximum tilt toward the sun. In the northern hemisphere, this occurs when the sun enters Cancer somewhere around June 21st. In the southern hemisphere, it occurs when the sun enters Capricorn somewhere around December 21st. As a result of this tilt, the summer solstice is the longest day of the year. Human beings have been marking the summer solstice for a very, very long time. In Wiltshire, England, from the vantage point of the middle of this stone circle at the famous Bronze Age site of Stonehenge, the sun rises directly over the heelstone. At Fajada Butte in Chaco Canyon, New Mexico, a dagger of light appears to pierce the heart of a petroglyph spiral. The Greek Antikythera mechanism, which, depending on which set of scientists you ask, has been dated anywhere from 250 to 60 BCE, is a marvelous piece of engineering that was used to track, among other dates, the summer solstice and the start of the Olympic Games. Today, Druids celebrate the summer solstice with a festival of Alban Hafen, which means the light of the shore. For them, the seashore is a place between the worlds, where the sky, sea, and earth meet. They view the summer solstice as an expression of that liminality, because while the sun god is at his strongest, his strength is also declining, and the days will grow shorter. Ancient Druids gathered mistletoe from the oak groves at high noon on summer solstice. Mistletoe does not have berries in the summer, and in that form, it was prized for its powers of protection. In order to ensure that none of this protective power was lost, Druids would spread or hold white linen under each tree so that the mistletoe would not fall directly on the earth and send the power into the ground. Wiccans and similarly oriented pagans refer to the summer solstice as Litha, or Letha, named after the Anglo-Saxon grain goddess. Letha celebrates the fertile powers of nature at their highest point. It is the time for feasting, swimming, bonfires, and even fireworks. As the summer solstice represents the marriage of heaven and earth, it is also a popular time for pagan weddings, complete with couples jumping the fire to cement their vows. One ancient tradition that is being revived in some areas is the ritual of driving livestock through the dying embers of the midsummer fire, though with the safety precaution of actually having two smaller fires with a path between to lead the animals through. Among the metaphysically inclined, one common belief about the summer solstice is that it is one of those times of the year when the quote-unquote veil between the living human world and the other world becomes thinner. In particular, many stories of humans entering the world of the fairies or sightings of fairies in the human world occur at midsummer. Perhaps some of these stories or sightings of his own inspired William Shakespeare to write A Midsummer Night's Dream. The summer solstice is a traditional time to gather herbs for purpose of protection, both for homes and animals. Boughs of rowan can be hung over entrances or stables, barns, chicken coops, sheep and goat enclosures, etc., to protect the animals from disease or harm caused by evil magic. By the same token, a sprig of rowan hung over a pet's favorite spot would confer the same special protection. Rue is considered protective against disease and poison, though it is poisonous itself when ingested in sufficient quantities. In Italy, rue was considered such an important herb that jewelry makers would make silver replicas of it to act as protection against the evil eye. In England, rue was believed to confer protection against fairy enchantments. In one of the many attempts by the church to eradicate pagan practices over the years, June 24th was designated as St. John's Day in the hopes that it would replace the summer solstice celebrations. This is how St. John's wort, another herb traditionally gathered at midsummer, came by its name. St. John's wort flowers around the summer solstice, and those flowers are cheerful, sunny, and yellow. In addition to making a lovely yellow dye, St. John's wort is also credited with the ability to bind spirits wherever it is hung. Vervain is another herb that is traditionally gathered at the summer solstice. Vervain is believed to have the power to purify and to banish evil and negativity. Lavender is also gathered at this time and used to make incense for summer solstice rites. Fern seeds, which are really spores still attached to the leaf and worn in the shoe, were once believed to make the wearer invisible. Today, the root of the male fern, with leaves intact, is dried over the summer solstice fire to create the lucky hand amulet. In the East Anglican tradition, the summer solstice is the seventh of the eight festivals of the natural year, which are celebrations of what Nigel Pennick calls the stations of the year. These stations express the round of life, death, and rebirth that is such an integral part of the agricultural cycle. At the same time, they are also a way of exploring the metaphysical questions of life, death, and the path to spiritual enlightenment. In this tradition, the stations are as follows. Station 1's festival? None. It's a mystery. The event? Death, rebirth. Agricultural cycle. Plant produces seeds and dies. 2. The autumnal equinox. The event? Calling or summoning? And the agricultural cycle. Fruit ripens and harvest. 3. Samhain, October 31st, the awakening. Letting go, and the seed is released. 4. Yule, enlightenment, rebirth of the spark of life in the seed. 5. The vernal equinox, reconciliation. Seed apparently dead comes back to life. 6. Beltane, May 1st, the mystic union. The plant grows in harmony with the environment. 7. Midsummer, sanctification. A flower opens and is fertilized. 8. Lammas, or August 1st, completion. The circle turns. Druids, Wiccans, and Celtic-centered pagans have a slightly different approach to observing the overarching cycle of the natural world. They refer to it as the wheel of the year and conceive of the cycles as follows. Festival, Samhain, which is October 31st, signals the ending and beginning of the year, remembering and contacting the honored dead. The agricultural cycle. The final harvest, livestock, who won't be overwintered or slaughtered. Winter solstice, Alban Arthan, or Artan. Death and rebirth. Death of the Holly King and rebirth of the Oak King. Longest night of the year. Imbolc, February 2nd, honoring the Mother Goddess. First faint signs of spring, lambs are born in some climates. Spring equinox, Alban, Ailir, Oster, celebrating the resurrection of the god, light overpowering darkness, equal day and night, flowers begin to appear, first seeds are planted. Beltane, May 1, celebrating the fertility of the land, spring is in full bloom. Summer solstice, Alban Hef, celebrating the union of heaven and earth, longest day of the year, Lub Nisad, August 1st, giving thanks to the goddess, first harvest particularly of grain, autumnal equinox, Alban Elfed Mabon, giving thanks to the goddess, and preparing for the return of the dark, equal day and equal night, second harvest particularly of fruit. Although the summer solstice occupies the seventh spot in the stations of the year, and the fourth spot in the most common wheel of the year, its essential significance is the same in both calendars. The summer solstice is a time to celebrate the light, when it's at its strongest, when exuberant growth is at its height. At the same time, we are reminded that the light will begin to wane thereafter, that we would do well to consider the nature of our spiritual harvest. Again, that comes from the philosophicalsociety.org, and I urge you to check that out. My Craftsman Plus question for you is, do you celebrate formally the summer solstice? Are you a practitioner of any faith or religion that celebrates these days? My understanding is that some of the religions that celebrate these days aren't recognized as religions that are okay for Freemasonry, but in other jurisdictions it's totally fine. So if you don't feel like saying that you believe in these things, that's also cool. I want to respect your privacy there. But I am interested in hearing about how you all might celebrate these different events. Myself, we probably, in my home anyway, we celebrate at least three of these. We love the 31st of October, which is in one of these is called Samhain, or it's also known as Samhain. I think a lot of people celebrate that as Halloween, but do you make it special? The spring equinox, Alban Elia or Easter. This is that celebrating the resurrection, which coincides coincidentally with the Easter holiday. So there is some correlation there. But then I think a lot of us also start to celebrate the solstices, right? There are St. John the Evangelist and St. John the Baptist days, which take over those respective dates as appropriated by the Roman Church. And then, of course, I've even seen some justification saying that that August date, that giving thanks to a goddess, might have some ties into the Thanksgiving holiday in November. But it's interesting, and I think if you are somebody who celebrates these days, I think it's awesome. Also, while celebrating the Christmas holiday, right, we also put together things for the Yule and celebrate the traditional Yule festival, the type of things. You know, we make a Yule log with candles, and we do all the stuff. We make a special drink that we share. It's really a good time for celebration. And I think I'm really looking forward to a lot of the celebrations that are going to be happening in 2021. That we really haven't been able to have in the recent year, right, because of COVID and the pandemic restrictions. But that's it for this week. I want to thank you all for coming with me on this adventure through the solstice and through the UAP phenomenon and asking questions about extraterrestrials and what would happen if an extraterrestrial tried to join your lot. So one last time, I want to go ahead and thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners. Legacy partners, keep an eye out on your email. I'm trying to get a hold of some of you because I'm trying to plan an episode with you, and I'd really like it if we can get started because I want to come through on my end of the bargain. You all have come through with yours by supporting the program, and I just really want to make sure that we put together an episode that you love. So if you're interested in being any part of the WCY Podcast Supporter Network, go on to the WCYpodcast.com website, click on Support the Show, and check out the different options there. Keep an eye out for Initiation of Plato, the live dramatized read of this play by Manly P. Hall. We're going to be putting that together soon. I think I've got some last-minute logistics before we start scheduling rehearsal calls, but keep an eye out for that. And, of course, again, if you want to know where a Masonic convention is going to happen around you, check out MasonicConferences.com. If you're looking for a speaker, check out MasonicInstruction.com, where you can just search by category and find somebody who's willing to either Zoom in or even fly out physically or drive out, whatever. We've got a bunch of people there ready to do talks for you. And when you contact them, you go straight to them. It doesn't come through me or anything else. I just put the website together. So with all that, thank you very much for joining us. We'll talk to you all next week. And until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.